After Hours continuing here on 610 Sports Radio. Drew Nixon filling in for Dusty Likens, Julio on the other side of the glass, where I normally am. We're having a good time. We talked about it a little bit to start things off. The Royals obviously are white hot. They're not even red hot. They are white hot right now. Back-to-back sweeps. They've won six straight. The rotation is dealing. And I think we see this with the Chiefs, that a lot of the question going into last year, well, Patrick Mahomes on the road. Can he do it on the road? He has shown that he can do it in any environment, any place, anywhere, any day. He is that guy that shows up in the biggest moments, doesn't make mistakes very often, if ever. And they obviously have back-to-back Super Bowls to prove it. I think Cole Reagans last night made a statement. Vern talked about it a little bit in his pregame show. Scooble was projected to have more strikeouts yesterday, actually, than Cole Reagans. And Cole Reagans went out and not only got his over the 7.5 that he was projected to have, but he had a career-high 12 strikeouts. And it's not that he pitched well that I'm saying this. It's not that he's one of the best pitchers, if not the best pitcher in the rotation when they're all at their peak. It's that when you're going toe-to-toe with one of the favorites for the Cy Young, and you, in a way, you got to tell yourself, you're getting disrespected. People are talking about Scooble, not Cole Reagans. And he went out and he was dealing. One hit allowed, 12 strikeouts. He was as elite as he can be in that game. And to go along with the Mahomes line, your stars step up in the biggest games. And again, this is just a regular season game. So, and I'm not going to get it twisted. This is one of 162, and it's not that big of a deal. But when you see what he did in that moment where people aren't talking about you, Cole, they're talking about the visiting pitcher who is one of the favorites for the Cy Young, and you just went and outdueled him. That's what I want to see from Cole Reagans. Seth Lugo's playing great. You got Bobby Witt Jr., who is one of the superstars in all of baseball. You could argue he's not just a top 10 player, he is a top 5 player with how good he has been. To give you a stat here, Bobby Witt Jr. is the first player since Barry Bonds in 1992 to have at least 100 bases total, 30 ribbies, 15 stolen bases in the first 50 games of the season. We're not even talking about home runs. He hadn't even really gotten going yet, I think, hitting home runs. Yeah, but he is doing everything else that you want out of a superstar player, and he's finding ways to be effective, as you expect from your superstar players. And Jake Eisenberg, for a dude that is only 23, he is one of the best players in baseball, and it is a great thing to have him locked in Kansas City.
Pretty incredible, and I got to think it's pretty incredible for the Royals front office and the Royals player development team to know that they were drafting a superstar, know that they were developing a superstar, and know that they now have a superstar who signed a long-term contract extension just this past offseason. You're going to have Bobby Witt Jr. for the foreseeable future. It's a pretty incredible thing to go to the ballpark every day knowing you get to see somebody special like that. And what makes Bobby Witt Jr. special is not just that he does all of the simple things so flawlessly. It's that he does the spectacular things and makes those spectacular things look simple. Like, you know, when there's a pop-up down the left field line and he starts sprinting after it, you know he's going to make the catch. When there's a ground ball hit up the middle and he's ranging to his left and diving, you know his glove's going to get there. When some reliever comes in throwing straight fire over the inside edge of the plate, you know that Witt's able to turn on it and jack it out over the left field fence. And sometimes he does things that you didn't even comprehend before, like hitting a ball into the upper tank of the fountains just to the left of crown vision. I mean, that home run the other night was absurd. Like, my jaw dropped in the booth. I've never seen a ball land there. And this is just the beginning. Like, keep in mind, like, we're 2 weeks shy of Bobby Witt Jr.'s 24th birthday.
The fact that he's only 23, too, and doing this is just, it's remarkable. 23, I was just getting into this industry. I'm 28 now. And I'm starting to feel a little bit better about myself, about where I'm at. Bobby Witt's already at 23 doing this stuff. Superstar player. J.J. Piccolo has done a fantastic job of helping build this roster up where it can be as good as it is currently. And somebody on the text line from the 816 said, it is a big deal to me because in order to be that team, You have to be consistent. And last year or in the past, some of these bad games may have turned into bad months, and they're not letting that happen. That is the key of what's making you a great team. Somebody also, it was the same person actually, said they also got to give props to Michael Massey. Did not expect him to show up like this. He's been great since coming back up from his injury and very consistent. And you got to give him some more credit. We talked about that actually a little bit today on Cody and Gold with how well he's been playing. But your superstars help, I think, kind of lead the way. And then you get the surprises, whether it be Michael Massey, whether it be Seth Lugo, whether it be Alec Marsh, whether it be Mikel Garcia starting to rake a little bit as well. Vinny Pasquantino is healthy and is playing very well. Salvi is Salvi. I mean, you've got a bevy of guys that are leading the way. And when you need your superstars to come up in big spots and in big games and make statements, they are doing it. And I only hope, Julio, you brought this up before in the bullpen. I think it's a great point that it is just the regular season, and we hope that it happens. If they make the playoffs, we hope that they can have these games where Cole Reagans is making that statement. Bobby Witt's going 3-for-4 with 2 homers and 5 RBIs or whatever he had the other day. But to that point, the playoffs matter a little bit more. But I think getting yourself these reps where you are consistently putting yourself in great positions and you're overachieving and you're giving yourself that confidence, and Vinny Pasquantino has said it before, is that we believe we're a good team, and now we're actually able to go out and prove it, where when you get to the playoffs, if you can have this sort of performance, the team is so young, you can tell yourself the sky's the limit. And to that texter's point, bad games happen, but they're not letting it snowball. And that's the ultimate thing there. What do you do after the 3 or 4 bad games to respond to that?
And I think the beautiful part of what's happening is that from the offensive side, I mean, the Royals aren't, they're not even reaching, they're close to their full potential. I mean, there's still young players on the offensive side of the ball that aren't really swinging the bat. Like you said, the bottom of the order could be better. I mean, Pasquantino is not hitting but we know he can mash. Yeah. So they have people like that, you know, that are young that are still trying to find their way. And that's, I think, what's so refreshing is they have so much young talent that's developing finally, but now mixing in some of the more veteran players, and it's just kind of all coming together. It's just so freaking beautiful to see, man.
It is a fantastic time to be a Royals fan. Again, 32-19, they're right on the cusp. If the Guardians didn't keep on winning, look, they'd be leading the Central right now. They're in a spot to win over 100 games. The franchise record is 102, and again, I'm not saying they're going to do that, but when you've got a guy that's being compared to Barry freaking Bonds before the steroids, and you can argue that he was a Hall of Famer before the whole steroid thing, you're doing something right. And that'd be Bobby Witt Jr., the superstar here, and it's a good thing that the Royals got him locked in when they did, because he might even be making, if they hadn't, he would be probably commanding more money.
And as a Royals fan, man, I'm not sure that's anything I ever thought I'd see the Royals do of making a commitment for that long for one of their superstars. I mean, again, I think we had a great run, right? 13, 14, 15, seeing those teams develop. But I think bigger picture wise, a lot of Royals fans have been, right, it's develop the talent and then they move on. It's kind of almost a different mindset now, which is really refreshing. Man, they could be good for a while.
And the fact that they're so young and they're hungry,
it's a different, it's a whole different culture now, it feels.
And then everything, of course, having Salvi in the room, I think, is so crucial for them, having a guy that's been there and done that, and can motivate them in a way that he's been there. So I know what it takes to do that, and I'm going to help you get there. Perfect player to have on the Royals, yeah.
How does that... That makes me feel so good for Salvi that he has, right, he's experienced the highest of the highs, mm-hmm. and he is now, he's been the lowest of the lows, to then come full circle back to greatness like this, to stick around this long. Man, I get that. That just makes me so happy for him.
Somebody from the 816 said, yeah, in my opinion, this team is more talented than the team that won the World Series, and that doesn't mean we're going to win, but that's what I think. I think you can argue that, particularly 2014, that was a little bit of a surprise. Yeah, I was a little bit of a whirlwind where this team is built to go and win games. And it maybe they're doing it a little bit sooner than what people thought, but that obviously is a great thing for all the Royals fans. here in Kansas City. On the other side, it's not confirmed yet, but Inside the NBA could be going away. We're going to go through some of the best moments in Inside the NBA's history. Not that they're going away, but we're going to look back at some good memories right here on After Hours at 610 Sports Radio. Thanks for listening. Don't go anywhere. We'll be back after the break.
You're listening to After Hours with Dusty Likens on 610 Sports Radio and the Odyssey app. Brought to you by Twin Peaks. Eats, drinks, scenic views.
After Hours continuing here on 610 Sports Radio. Drew Nixon in for Dusty Likens. Julio on the other side. So I'm sure this has come up. This is a little bit of a thing on social media that's happening. Inside the NBA could be going away with the new NBA TV rights deal. Still, TNT can technically match any offer, but it's thought of that NBC is going to break the bank a little bit to make sure that they can get the NBA back, which, by the way, has a fantastic theme song. But they don't have Inside the NBA. And there's been moments that people have just in living memory of Inside the NBA, some of the favorite moments. And I don't know if you've got any. 913-586-7610. I've got a couple, though, that are just all-timers. They make you laugh. It's more than just a basketball show. If you want to laugh, you've been having a bad day, turn on Inside the NBA. They're gonna make
so
you laugh.
They're so entertaining, man.
They're going to make you laugh at some point. And I think the thing that's perfect about the show, and I'll play a couple of my favorites in a second, they find a way to talk about basketball, but also mix in some random stuff that makes you laugh, and it's worth watching. It's worth staying up until midnight to watch the show.
They just have so much fun kind of bantering with each other back and forth. And I think another thing that I really appreciate is they're very honest with their takes. I mean, and they'll have the players on and they will be honest with how they feel or where they stand with them. And it's no holds bars. I mean, they don't hold anything back with each other or with NBA players.
No, they don't. And to that point, Charles Barkley doesn't like Galveston, Texas, evidently, and had this to say after the Pelicans were out in the series. You might have heard it already, but he also mentioned San Antonio and one of the funnier bits that they have. Here's one of my favorites from Inside the NBA.
Disappointing on us. Where they going, Chuck?
Galveston. That dirty ass water. We're not even gonna send them to Cancun. We're gonna send them to Galveston with that dirty ass water be washed up on the shore. You people think they're in the beach.
It's beautiful. We're not going there.
Would you go on a vacation?
You got a chance. Hell no, I ain't going on vacation.
You got a chance to wipe the slate clean here.
I would go to Galveston. That water's so dirty, I'd rather go to San Antonio. I'd rather go to San Antonio with them big old women. No, so I'm not good going to Galveston. I want to go to the beach down in the river walk and watch them big old women walk around.
So you know what? So you know what sets him off. Okay, so you know what?
Would you rather go, Chuck? San Antonio. And that's where they been in Victoria's Secret, Jack.
Why is it secret?
Because them little women down there, they can't get in them cute little underwear. They wear bloomers down in San Antonio.
Oh, my God.
It's such a good, it makes you laugh. And then when Shaq always, what do you say, Chuck? Say it again, Chuck. And then it just makes it even funnier.
They have no filter. They just, especially Chuck, man, he has zero filter.
So somebody texted in my favorite moments when Shaq fell into the Christmas tree. That's happened twice. He fell into it once, and then Kenny pushed him into it. There was another time that somebody dressed up as a Chris Bosh and dumped a tree on him while he was trying to shoot a layup. There's so many good moments. So many good ones. There's another one. Charles Barkley and the bracelet story. Have you heard this one, Julio?
I've not.
He got a bracelet. Well, let me let Chuck explain.
Like, who made your bracelet? That looks like an aggressive.
You know, I got this bracelet from a guy in the steam room back in Arizona.
You got a bunch.
Hey, Kenny, quit asking questions.
You
man.
Got the bracelet from a guy in the steam room. Explain, please. Please explain.
I saw this guy wear this in the steam room, and I noticed it's dark.
So what did you ask him for?
Are you kidding me?
We get out of the steam room, we get dressed. He comes over, he said, man, you can have the bracelet.
Wait,
I had a question. Were towels on or off in the
towels
steamroom?
Towels were on.
Towels were on, Chuck?
Towels were on. But he was a real nice guy. He gave
obviously, me. He was real nice.
Well, yeah. In the steam room.
And I guess
was it a steamer, a sauna?
It was a sand. It was a sauna.
Okay.
You know what no, it was a steam room, actually. Well,
right? How'd you see that in the steam room?
Don't tell nobody else that story,
you're
Chuck.
You're too late. You're too honest,
y'all
man.
Haters,
that's your
man.
Problem, man. You're
hey, man, whatever your name
you
is.
Just say, hey, look,
I don't even know his name.
I don't know his name.
And he gave you a bracelet in the steam room as he was rubbing oil on your back.
So
you don't
empty.
Even know his name. Oh, man. The guy's rubbing oil on your back.
He wasn't rubbing oil on your back.
It's so good. And hearing Ernie just cracking up in the background, I think it's so much fun where it's not even related to basketball, but it's a moment where you said it, they're so honest that people fall in love with the personalities, almost the way that some people can enjoy a specific show on the radio, or people can enjoy, you know, hearing a specific TV show, that people identify with them and they're willing to spend more time than they typically would to watch a pregame show or the postgame show.
I'm going to be very sad if
I know
they end up going a different direction with that show. I think I don't have any audio, but where they race each other to the screen to diagram
all
plays
time
and
moments.
Such.
Yeah.
Those are when Kenny falls racing Chuck to the screen. I mean, some of those moments, just seeing those old guys try and get up and run and touch the screen first. Oh,
it's so good. And then, so good. Yeah, of course, Shaq, somebody texted in Shaq just saying, don't tell anybody else that story, Chuck, like he didn't just say it on TV. It's great. and Charles Barkley was on the Dan Patrick Show today, and I don't have the audio for it, but he basically said that he owns a production company, and somebody mentioned to him on social media, actually, this idea that he should have his production company take Inside the NBA and still make it a show, but it's not something that's on TV necessarily, or they could sell it to whoever wants it, or they could just do a show on YouTube where they still it's those four and they get to act a fool. Somebody texted in from the 832. My favorite is when Chuck starts carrying on about the guys banging on you. That's another one.
what's cool about that with them potentially going that direction is there's already kind of a foundation for that, right? Where you have like the Manning Show, where like it's an alternate broadcast to. What is it, Monday Night Football, I believe, or is it Sunday Night Football? But then you also have things like Kevin Hart has kind of something similar
yeah.
with the NBA going right now with the NBA playoffs. So maybe they can kind of do something like that. That would be fantastic as well.
Like the alternate broadcast is what you're saying.
Yeah.
Yeah, I... there's so many good ones. I was trying to find the cut where when a guy is banging on you, and he said something about, you know, you need to feel where his, you need to feel him a little bit. And Shaq is just dying on the side. There's so many all-time moments with the Inside the NBA. And I definitely hope that they do not go. Real quick, somebody texted in regarding Caitlin Clark. I don't know if you've been seeing Caitlin Clark and the whole hype stuff with her being in the WNBA. Now, she got a haymaker thrown at her the other night. Well, wasn't even a foul called.
They're doing her dirty, man. They're doing her dirty.
There's
no appreciation.
People are taking shots at her. Like, she's not the reason why there's now no longer charter flights. You can fly. They've got direct flights. They've got an upgrade in that. They've got, you know, proper treatment. They're now showing players, you know, when they get the intro shots of them walking into the building, the outfits they're wearing. WNBA is starting to do that too. The coverage is so much better because of Caitlin. And look, the pundits can say whatever they want to, but Dawn Staley, one of the best coaches in women's sports in general, said she's improved the game so much and she is one of the GOATs because she's done a lot for the sport. When you got somebody saying you've done a lot for the sport, you know that they've made a serious impact. And another person saying Chuck's ran about Phoenix when they sucked. There's so many good moments across Inside the NBA. There's too many to count. I mean, we could almost give a whole 3-hour show.
I mean, every show, literally, there's a gem somewhere in every show they do.
Absolutely. My Pacers are on ESPN right now. TNT Pacers will be back tomorrow. Born and raised in Indianapolis, baby. So they blew game one. They're up
they
right
choked.
Now. Hopefully they can.
They had it, man.
Yeah, hopefully they can pull this one out. Up next, Kansas State coach Chris Klieman going to play an interview that I was able to do with him, a conversation regarding expectations for his program. Avery Johnson is the head honcho now. what is it like for him to go through a spring as the guy and not just backing up Will Howard, and a little bit more on the impact that his locker room has on players in the portal and also name, image, and likeness. That comes up next on After Hours at 610 Sports Radio.
You're listening to After Hours with Dusty Likens on 610 Sports Radio and the Odyssey app. Brought to you by Twin Peaks. Eats, drinks, scenic views.
Back here on After Hours, 610 Sports Radio. Drew Nixon filling in for Dusty Likens. Julio producing the show. I was able to have a conversation with Coach, Kansas State football coach Chris Klieman, talking a little bit about his program going through the spring and Avery Johnson, as well as some of the other things like expectations for them now that Texas and Oklahoma are out of the Big 12. What are K-State's goals and aspirations? Here is my conversation again with Kansas State head football coach Chris Klieman.
Overall, just how has the spring been from start to finish? What things have you liked? What was the goal of the spring for you?
Our goal every year, it seems like, is just to develop the young guys that maybe didn't play in the fall, and some of the guys that maybe were backups, seeing how they do in a different role as starters. Spring ball has kind of changed over the last 5 years for sure. Your numbers aren't as great as they used to be with just the amount of players because of injuries and stuff. Plus, you want to make sure you get through healthy. And so we had a good spring. Got a lot of work to do to get to fall, but we finished our 15 days on April 13th, and the guys are in the weight room and had a good 15 days.
What makes the spring important for your program? Obviously, everybody's a little bit different. Some people do games, some people don't do games. You're looking to replace some guys. What does the spring signify for what you're looking to do in the fall?
Yeah, all of the above. Trying to see where we lost guys in the offensive line, so we were trying to make sure that to shore up our offensive line and make it a great competition amongst the 10 guys that are competing there. Trying to solidify a backup for DJ Giddens, trying to find some guys in the secondary. We were down a lot of guys in the secondary last year. We were beat up as the season ended. So creating depth back there, that's kind of what coaches do every year, is just try to figure out where your weaknesses are and shore those up.
Amidst all of those changes, one of them, Will Howard, obviously moving on in the portal. You got Avery Johnson in. How important is it that Avery got some of that experience last year, being able to play and get some of those reps, and now having a full spring where he's the guy?
Yeah, I think that was huge. The whole month of December for him to, he had the whole month where he was the starter, where he was one of the leaders, where he had a chance to get his feet wet. And the Pop-Tarts Bowl was a great thing for him because he had success, had some adversity, and then finished with a lot of success. And I think to have everything happen to you in the bowl game, where it goes well, it doesn't go well, and then you finish strong, is going to give him confidence heading into the fall. And then in the spring, just knowing that he was the guy, knowing he was the starter, I thought he had a really good spring. He continued to master his craft. He's learning some new things offensively with our new quarterback coach in Matt Wells. So I thought he had a really good spring. And I think he's still going to make leaps and leaps because he's still a young player that's learning the position.
In terms of, you have DJ, the wide receiver group. What does Avery bring to the offense that can help take you guys to the next level in regards to competing for the Big 12 championship, competing for a playoff appearance and all of that?
Yeah. Well, his athleticism is probably as good as any quarterback in the country and as good as anybody I've coached, because he can run the football. We're going to use him as a thrower. Everybody thinks he's a running quarterback. He's not. He's a tremendous thrower that can get himself out of trouble with his legs. Mm-hmm. But just the athleticism gives us another dimension that a lot of teams don't have. But I'm excited about with Avery is, how detailed he is, how he wants to know everything within the offense. He's a tremendous pocket passer as well. And, that was what we tried to work on this spring, was was staying in the pocket and throwing the football on time. And we've got some talented wide receivers. And the sky's the limit for Avery. And he's a competitor and wants to be great. That's the fun thing is he knows he hasn't reached his peak. And he's pushing himself every day because he wants to get better and better.
You mentioned some of the way that the season finished and everything. 9-4 year, you go through the Pop-Tarts Bowl. What is something that you went through last year that you want to try to fix to avoid next year? Is there anything that you want to? Is it turnovers? Is it something to do with the system and try to be a little bit more consistent?
Well, 9 wins isn't a bad season though either.
No, it is not. Right, you're right.
And I know we won the Big 12 the year before, but it's a tough league. No, we're always trying to be more consistent. I think that's the biggest thing is being more consistent on both sides of the ball, whether it's, you know, red zone efficiency offensively and defensively, third down efficiency. We're trying to do so many things, which is part of the situation football. And yet not necessarily just what you do on first and second down. But the third down stuff, the red zone efficiency, those are the areas that we're trying to make sure and always try to shore up because those are the ones that maybe are the difference between a close ball game not going your way.
The Big 12, as you mentioned, is it the consensus seems to be that it's wide open now with Texas and Oklahoma leaving. You obviously, you know, having won it a couple of years ago, I think you would argue, well, we're there a part of that group that is favored to win. Is that the expectation going into the season that you compete for, if not win, the Big 12 championship?
I would say there's 16 teams that all expect to compete and win the Big 12 championship. I really do. And with the transfer portal, with injuries and departures and stuff, I think whoever has the best team come August and can stay healthy is going to be the one that probably wins it. And we feel we have every opportunity to be that team, But you're right with Oklahoma, Texas out, and you know the new teams, the both Arizona schools and Colorado, Utah. There's some really good football teams coming in, as well as you know we play Cincinnati and BYU. We didn't play those guys last year. They're both good football teams. It's going to be a pretty wide open race this year, and injuries and whoever can stay healthy and keep their team together is going to probably be the one that's favored.
From the spring, obviously, you know, everybody's got their eyes on Avery and the quarterback, as you always would. But who are some guys that have stepped up over the course of the spring on either side of the ball that, you know, you've identified as they had a really good spring and looking forward to getting to fall camp?
Yeah. I always I am cautious when I talk about that because then I'll forget a kid. but our offensive line is probably where we had the most departures, and we probably have about 9 or 10 guys there that I feel comfortable with right now. And we're trying to develop even a couple more, but that's the area that we had to shore up the most. And I'm excited about the offensive line and the depth we have and how much better we got. And then on defense, I would say the safety position, you know, we play a 3-safety defense. We had a lot of guys injured last year. And so we didn't have a lot of depth there. We went out and recruited some depth, some young kids, Wesley Fair, Mikey Bergeron, a couple of local guys, that had really good springs are looking to jump into that mix. And the offensive line and the secondary are probably the areas that we wanted to shore up the most from what we had lost the year before.
I'm sure you're asked about the portal all the time and all the NIL stuff that goes on, but how have the ever-changing things in college athletics made you adjust, obviously, from your time at NDSU to now coming to Kansas State and how you've had to build up your program maybe a little bit differently?
Yeah, you're always adapting and adjusting. And we did it, 10 years ago at North Dakota State. Mm. It changed when I got here in 2019. Then the pandemic hit. It changed again. It's always evolving. And you always have to adapt and adjust. This is just a new thing that we're adapting and adjusting to over the last couple of years, which is the name, image, and likeness piece, which I'm excited because kids deserve the opportunity to profit off their name, image, and likeness, and I'm good with that. The transfer portal has been good for Kansas State. It's been obviously a different thing in college athletics, but you know, we had Julius Brantz, we had Josh Hayes, we had Adrian Martinez, we had Cade Warner. We had some transfers that were really good for us, and so I can't say, boy, it's not good. No, it's been great for us. And it's just ever evolving. And so you have to stay on top of everybody on your team, as well as looking ahead if you have to fill a void.
Is that one of the things that you know, it gets you fired up a little bit more, is to come to work? Is not only do I get to try to bring in new players that can help our program, but I get to help lead younger guys to be better people, to be better football players. And that's some of the satisfaction that you get out of the job.
Yeah. We have a locker room right now, and everybody talks about their culture, their locker room and all that stuff. I think ours is as good as there is in college football because of the kids in the locker room, because of the players in there that they set the standard. Our players set the standard in our locker room. And so when you look at the transfer portal, that's the first thing I look at. I don't care what kind of player they are. Are they going to fit into our locker room? Are they going to enhance our locker room? If I thought they were going to cause any issues in our locker room, then I got to go in a different direction, because your locker room is all you have. And our players, they police that and they love that locker room. And so, you know, when we have somebody come in, they're going to visit with our players to say, and our players are going to say, yes, they fit or no, they don't. And that's something that is still very underrated in this world of transfer portal and NIL and stuff, is do new players fit into our locker room? And I've got great faith in our seniors and upperclassmen that they're going to make sure that we get the right fits.
Kansas State coach Chris Kleiman, coach, thank you so much for taking the time. I really appreciate it. Good luck as we get to the fall, and hopefully we can do this again.
Awesome. Appreciate it. Thanks.
Yeah, it was really good to have Coach Kleiman on, and he mentioned in particular the running back room. They've got Dylan Edwards now, who is going to be that backup for DJ Giddens. I mean, they've done, again, I said it before, they're a school that's got to get into the portal to really upgrade their roster. Effectively, some of the offensive line stuff, they got a guy, Easton Kilty, who is a 4-star transfer from North Dakota, interior guy, Cooper Beebe. Not that he's a direct replacement for Cooper, but it's really interesting when talking to Coach Kleiman about his program. That interview is from the 249 Miles of Football podcast. Again, it's not just a K-State thing or just a KU thing or just a Missouri thing. It's all three schools. You can catch it wherever you listen to podcasts. We cover all three schools every single episode. So check it out on the Odyssey page or wherever you listen to your podcasts. Pleasure to have Coach Kleiman on as well. Coming up next, we are going to dive into expectations for the wide receiver position and for Travis Kelce and maybe even Jared Wiley as well. What we know where she's getting suspended, but what should we expect from each of the wide receivers and tight ends who get significant playing time next season directly? This is After Hours. Stay tuned next. You're listening to it on 610 Sports Radio.
You're listening to After Hours with Dusty Likens on 610 Sports Radio and the Odyssey app. Brought to you by Twin Peaks. Eats, drinks, scenic views.
This is number one champion sound. Yeah, Estelle, we about to get down. Who the hottest in the world?
After
right
Hours continuing here on 610 Sports Radio. Drew Nixon sitting in for Dusty Likens. Julio producing the show tonight. We just sold out. Obviously, the Chiefs wide receiver room was not great last year. Got some upgrades. Talked about those a little bit earlier. Hollywood Brown.
Good enough.
Good enough is the right word, which I think is why people should be optimistic for this team. We'll talk in a little bit after the out-of-nowhere question at the top of the hour why the offense could be a little bit better in terms of what they're practicing. Helps having Hollywood Brown. Helps having Xavier Worthy now on the team. You return Justin Watson. Rashee Rice, of course, has the suspension coming at some point. Travis Kelce, obviously, the GOAT tight end, still on the roster, a little bit older, but nonetheless, a lot of talent on this offense. What should be the expectations, though? Like, what are your expectations for what the wide receiver and tight end position brings individually? What should we expect from Rashee Rice? What should we expect from Hollywood Brown, from Travis Kelce? We'll go even all the way down to Justin Watson, and we'll bring Jared Wiley, the rookie, in as well in this. I think that the reason why I bring this up is Andy Reid, in his press conference the other day, was asked what Rashee has been like this offseason on the field. He's been at OTAs. He's been working out amidst all of the stuff that's been going on off the field, of course. But Andy said that Rashee's getting a workload upgrade from last season.
Oh, obviously we're going to increase what he does. At the same time, make sure that he takes what he wasn't doing well last year and working on that. And we try to do that with all the guys. So we try to give him a little bit more. But at the same time, making sure that we don't forget about the things from last year.
I think that's what's going to make Rashee a lot more reliable and dynamic of a wide receiver. Is last year he was kind of forced to play because the wide receiver room was so bad, and he showed, hey, I can be that guy on the field who you can rely on to make plays. I mean, he had over 100 targets last year and came through for them on multiple occasions as being that consistent weapon and reliable guy in the wide receiver room. It'll be interesting to see what they do to make him even better. Not to say that he's going to have more production from a yardage standpoint or from a touchdown standpoint necessarily. I mean, last year he did have 938 yards, had 7 touchdowns, led the team actually in receiving touchdowns a season ago. But I think in terms of being a more dynamic wide receiver and a guy that can get open a little bit easier, knows what it's like to go through things, having Andy said this, what is your expectation for Rashee? We know he's going to get suspended, but is this your expectation that he comes through as being a true number one wide receiver, or is there any particular expectation for Rashee to be better than where he was last year?
First of all, no love for your boy Irv Smith. I mean, come on, you know.
Listen, there's a reason why Irv Smith is no longer on the Bengals, and also a reason why Jared Wiley, who's a rookie, is going to be higher than him on the depth chart.
All right.
I'll say that. Okay. I appreciate you bringing him up, and I would love to be the positive person here with Irv Smith, but he might not even make the roster.
Yeah. This is true. That's a good thing, by the way. It's a good thing Jared Wiley is bringing him out. It's an excellent thing, actually.
It is, and we're going to get to him in a minute. I think Rashee can be – I don't think he is the number one wide receiver or will be that guy on this team. I think I think him and Hollywood can be a good combination. Is he a true number one wide receiver still? I don't think so, and that's – it's not a knock against Rashee. It's just Rashee will be a guy that can get you 1,000, 1,100 yards consistently. Hollywood Brown has gotten over 1,000 yards. He hasn't been – as prolific of a wide receiver as I think he will be in this offense, because he hasn't had a quarterback like Patrick Mahomes throwing him the football. Lamar's been very good, but he's not Patrick Mahomes. I think that's where Xavier Worthy, and I'll get to him more in particularly in a second, can have a spark for the offense, maybe earlier than what Andy typically has for wide receivers in the first round, because one, the Chiefs haven't, I mean, they took Rashee in the second round. They took Sky Moore in the second round. So they're taking a wide receiver in the first round and they traded up for him. I think Xavier Worthy should be playing earlier on because, one, he's the caliber of player that you drafted in the first round, and two, you traded up for him and he's ready to go right away.
Yes.
And the wide receiver room to me, Julio, is still, it's not upgraded enough where there's a veteran who you can rely on more to take his place. Like Xavier Worthy is the third best. Right now he is number 3 on the depth chart, and I don't think you can put Justin Watson ahead of him. Put KT ahead of him, Kadarius Toney or Sky Moore, where Xavier Worthy's going to get playing time because he's the third most talented wide receiver on the roster, and I think he's got the talent where maybe not week 1 or 2, but by week 5 or 6, I think he can legitimately be in the offense in certain packages where he can tear up a defense.
Yeah, so going back to Rashee Rice, I actually think he maybe takes a little bit of a step back, and I and not in a bad way, right? And what I mean by that is last year, again, like you kind of alluded to, they had no choice. They had to force feed him the ball. He was really their only reliable wide receiver target. Whereas coming into this year, although Marquise Brown is his first year, again, he's a proven veteran. I think he takes some of those targets away. I agree, Xavier Worthy coming in, first-round pick. Although him and Marquise kind of play maybe similar position-ish, right?
Sure.
He's going to also take some of those targets away. Hopefully Jared Wiley comes in, takes some of those targets away. So I don't think by sheer volume that Rashee Rice is going to get necessarily what he got last year. I think too, right? Like they've talked about already, the dynamics of the offense itself are going to be a little bit different. They're going to push the ball down the field a little bit more, which isn't necessarily Rashee Rice's strength at this point, right? So yeah. I think there's just going to be a lot of different nuances to the offense this year to where he's not going to be relied upon as much. And again, that's not a bad thing. It doesn't mean he's not going to be as effective. It's just going to be a little bit different, I think.
I think that, that's even where, to your point, Xavier Worthy being able to play and make an impact sooner can help Rasheed out a little bit more. Is, you know,
I don't think he will, though.
I think...
Okay.
You think Hollywood's going to be the main, the guy in terms of them pushing the ball down the field? Hollywood's going to be the guy to watch from that standpoint.
For now, yes. And I only say that just historically speaking, Andy Reid does not necessarily trust...
Yeah, the rookie thing. I know.
Last year was different, right? Because he was clearly forced to. He had no choice. But other than that, typically he brings those rookies in slow, especially on the offensive side of the ball, just because their concepts are so complicated. And I think that's going to be. I think they're going to kind of take that same approach with Xavier Worthy, where they'll put certain packages in smaller impacts in the game. Maybe they use them a little bit more in special teams, that kind of thing. And that's kind of how they bring him in, kind of like how they did Sky Moore, although they're two totally different players. Yeah. I think they'll have two totally different impacts on the game. But I think you're setting yourself up for failure if you think going into the season to start, at least the first half of the season, that Xavier Worthy is going to have much of an impact, if at all.
Do you think that he is, well, do you think number three wide receiver is a starter? I mean,
it depends on who the number three wide receiver is.
I know there's the whole debate of personnel and all that stuff. I think a number three wide receiver is a starter. I think he is a number three wide receiver. I think, to me, for sure, week one, I think he is your punt returner. I think that he is the guy. I think that's what Andy has suggested, at least. He's going to be number one on that return slot. He will be the guy. And I think, to your point, again, I'm not saying week two or week three. If by week six... you can have Xavier Worthy in on some packages where you're doing jet sweeps with him, where you're running him some bubble screens, where, hey, dude, this is not too complicated. This is not... Did the mic go off?
You're good.
Oh, I heard the... I turned the knob down on my headphones. I'm sorry.
Nope, you're good. Rookie mistakes, eh?
Rookie mistake from being on this side of the glass. I'm used to being on your side, Julio. Right. But for him to be in bubble screens where you just get him the ball, hey, dude, it's not too complicated. We trust that you're going to continue to develop schematically in your route running, and you're going to learn the playbook a little bit more. We're just going to get you the football. Punt returns, we're going to run you some screens. We might do a jet sweep with you, get you the ball, utilize that speed. If he can stay healthy, and of course, that's a caveat for everybody, I guess. But if he can stay healthy, he can be a guy that I think in week six or seven can be dynamic, maybe not in a volume standpoint, like what you're saying, but in terms of a back-breaking play where you bring him in on fourth and five in the third quarter and you got the ball on the opponent's 40-yard line and you need a play, get him the ball and just let him go.
But are you going to rely on a rookie in a fourth and five? And while I would tend to agree with you from a traditionally built football team as a wide receiver three, yes, but it's different because then you also have Kelsey. Right, who adds a different dynamic. So really, you're the fourth, maybe even fifth target.
Let's get to Travis, because that I think to your point that the addition of Hollywood is really important for Travis Kelce, I think more than Xavier Worthy 100%. Or whatever.
Yeah.
Because of what he can do in the offense, it helps Rasheed out, it'll help Travis out a bunch. And then you add Xavier Worthy in there. Travis is the guy where all of a sudden defenses are going to have to decide, look, or if we're doubling Travis... Yep. Then we're going one-on-one with Hollywood and with Rasheed when he's playing and when Xavier Worthy is playing, because he's going to play when Rasheed's out in all likelihood, whether it be week five or six or seven or eight, whenever that is, because we think Rasheed probably is getting six or more games, I think minimum of six. You have to figure out what you're going to do. Either you're going to double Travis or you got to figure out how you're going to guard guys who have 4-2 speed. And that's where the whole D-ball thing...
Trouble, man.
If they can connect on a couple of D-balls, and last year, guys were getting open. MVS would get open. Mecole Hardman would get open, but they couldn't catch the ball. They couldn't track it. And you're pulling your hair because you're like, guys, we're on the edge of making a great big-time play where Hollywood Brown can be that guy. Xavier Worthy can be that guy. And it relieves Travis of having to be the guy that gets 12 targets every single game and he's getting beat up. I think that's where Jared Riley, real quick, before we go to break, is also important because... he's not going to be Travis Kelce, but I think that he can be a really good player to be alongside Travis, that when the time comes and Travis is no longer on the team, he can be a go-to guy, particularly in the red zone. He had 8 touchdowns last year, was very good for TCU in the red zone. A reliable target, 6'7". The dude's huge. Learning from Travis will help him elevate his potential, I think, even higher, where he's not going to be Travis Kelce, but he can be a guy that's reliable enough to help take the pressure off of Travis, help take the pressure off of Hollywood or Rashee, and make the offense, that top five offense, I think that's flashy and people want to see. Again, it's After Hours on 610 Sports Radio. When we come back, we get the out-of-nowhere question. The question that's out of nowhere, you'll be able to answer it right here on 610 Sports Radio.
You're listening to After Hours with Dusty Likens on 610 Sports Radio and the Odyssey app. Brought to you by Twin Peaks. Eats, drinks, scenic views.